Good afternoon. I'll be talking about an evaluation of newborn metabolic screening forms that I completed this summer as part of the health research training program in New York City. In 2008, there were about 12,000 infants born to hepatitis B positive women in the United States. And without intervention, about 40% of these infants will eventually become infected with hepatitis B. Prevention of perinatal Hep B is fairly straightforward and involves a post-exposure prophylaxis, which is the standard three-dose regimen of hepatitis B vaccine, and then the addition of the hepatitis B immune globulin within 12 hours of birth. And with post-exposure prophylaxis, about 90 to 95% of these perinatal cases can be prevented. So New York City's perinatal hepatitis B prevention program routinely conducts surveillance for hepatitis B surface antigen positive pregnant women to help prevent perinatal infection of their infants. In 2008, our program identified almost 1,800 births to surface antigen positive women in New York City, which makes it the second highest caseload in the country. We rely on four standard reporting sources. The first two are prenatal reporting from the prenatal care provider and the laboratory, and then two postnatal sources, the newborn nursery and the newborn metabolic screening form, which is currently the only universal reporting method available in New York City. So every newborn in the state of New York has a blood specimen taken at birth, which is then sent to the New York State Department of Health in Albany, and they test for over 40 congenital diseases. On the newborn screening form, there's a field for recording maternal surface antigen status. You can see it in red there. And this is transcribed directly from the mother's chart onto the screening form. There's not an actual test conducted at this point. And it can be transcribed as negative, positive, missing, unknown, or sometimes the data is actually missing. And accurate recording on the screening form requires access to the maternal result as well as proper transcription onto the form. In 2008, we had 97% of the screening forms in New York City were negative, and 2% were positive, and 1% were missing or unknown. And the perinatal program then routinely follows up on all positive cases. So we had three main objectives for this study. The first was to assess the overall completeness of the metabolic screening forms for identifying surface antigen positive women. And to do this, we answered two main questions. First, are all infants in New York City actually receiving a metabolic screening form? And second, how can we interpret screening forms with either unknown status or missing data? Next, we wanted to assess the accuracy of the screening forms relative to our own perinatal program data. And we looked at the sensitivity, so are all screening forms that are positive actually positive cases? And the specificity, are all negative screening forms actually negative? And finally, we wanted to identify some of the best practices for collection of screening form data. So as part of this, we conducted basically four separate evaluations. We started by looking at birth certificate data and comparing that to the metabolic screening forms. We then conducted chart reviews at 10 different hospitals in the city of New York. Then we conducted an individual case match between the screening form data and perinatal program data. And finally, we conducted two site visits to determine some of the best practices for transcription and reporting. So for the birth certificate comparison, we looked at the overall number of birth certificates compared to the metabolic screening forms received for the city of New York. We didn't do this at an individual level. We looked only at citywide data, and then we did a hospital by hospital comparison. So for the citywide data, we found that there were only 439 fewer screening forms than birth certificates. So that was about a 0.3% difference. And at the hospital level, we found that 94% of hospitals had greater than 99% concordance between the birth certificates and the screening forms. So overall, it appeared that most infants in the city of New York are receiving metabolic screening forms. The first set of chart reviews that we conducted was at the 5 hospitals in the city of New York with the highest surface antigen positive deliveries in 2008. And we specifically selected these hospitals to bias our sample so that we could find infected women. We looked at all unknown or missing screening forms, so that was a total of 84 charts, and found that 90% of them were actually negative. So they had a negative result in the maternal chart, but had been incorrectly recorded as unknown or missing on the screening form. We identified one positive case that had not been previously identified by the perinatal program, and we found that 8% of the charts had no surface antigen result. At those same hospitals, we also did a random sample of negative screening forms for 166 charts, and we found none of those to be positive, and only one chart had a missing surface antigen result. We did a second set of chart reviews looking at the 5 hospitals in New York City with the most screening forms that had an unknown or missing result. And at these hospitals, we actually took a line listing of all unknown and missing screening forms and sent those over to the hospital, where the staff in the newborn nursery and medical records actually did the chart reviews for us. And they identified 11 surface antigen positive mothers, of which 8 had not been previously identified by our program. 427 mothers had negative status, so they had again been incorrectly recorded as unknown or missing on the screening form. And the staff at these hospitals were unable to locate about 16% of the charts. We next did an individual case match between the newborn metabolic screening forms and the available information in our database. And we matched on infant date of birth and medical record number, as well as mother's name and address. So we started with just over 120,000 metabolic screening forms for the entire city of New York, and almost 1,800 confirmed surface antigen positive cases in the perinatal program database. And we divided the metabolic screening forms into 1,800 positives for the city of New York and all of the rest, so negative, missing, and unknown, which was just over 118,000. Then we tried to match the positive cases on the metabolic screening forms with those in our perinatal database, and we found just over 1,600 matching cases. We further identified 181 false positives. So these were cases that had been identified on the screening form as positive. They had been sent to the perinatal program in New York City. We conducted follow-up and determined that they were actually negative. And finally, there were 9 positive metabolic screening forms that didn't match any of our records, and those cases are currently under review. So we then took the remaining 169 cases in the perinatal program database and looked for those in the negative, missing, or unknown data from the screening forms. And we identified 169 false negatives. So those were cases that were negative, missing, or unknown on the screening form, but that we had identified through other sources, such as prenatal reporting by the laboratory or prenatal care provider. And finally, there were 6 cases in our database that did not match a metabolic screening form, and those cases are also currently under review. So overall, we found a sensitivity of about 90.5% and a specificity of about 99.85%. One caveat on these numbers is that we did not take a random sample of all negatives on the metabolic screening forms to verify that they were in fact negative. So these numbers probably need some adjusting if we were able to conduct that further evaluation. The last step in our project was 2 site visits that were conducted, one at the hospital with the highest completion rate for maternal surface antigen status on the metabolic screening form, and one at a hospital with a relatively low completion rate. At those hospitals, we met with the hematology lab and the nurse manager in the newborn nursery. And we reviewed their written policies and also discussed with them where they thought that errors might occur in the transcription and reporting process. And we noted some differences between the 2 hospitals, which led to the identification of some best practices. First, we noted that placing a copy of the lab report in the maternal record helped increase accuracy, and this was true for both hospitals that use a paper maternal record as well as an electronic link to an electronic lab report. Also, we thought it was important to train staff to interpret and transcribe lab reports onto the metabolic screening form. And then also repeating tests for women without a copy of the lab report. In particular, the hospital with the highest completion rate had a policy of repeating testing for anyone presenting to labor and delivery without a copy of the actual lab report in their file. And finally, establishing lab protocols to ensure fast and accurate reporting. So in summary, the metabolic screening forms appeared to be generally complete, but did have some limitations. In New York City, it appears that over 99% of infants do receive a metabolic screening form, but about 9% of those identified as positive are actually negative, which requires substantial resources on the part of the New York City Department of Health to conduct follow-up on these non-cases. And then about 10% of perinatal cases that were identified through other means were identified as negative, missing, or unknown on the metabolic screening form. And then a small proportion of the unknown and missing screening forms represent surface antigen positive mothers that had not been previously identified by the perinatal program. And so then following some of the best practices that we noted would lead to more accurate metabolic screening form data. Our study did have some limitations. First, the birth certificates and metabolic screening forms were not matched on an individual level. Which makes it difficult to determine the reasons that some infants were not receiving screening forms. Further, the chart reviews were conducted at select hospitals. As I mentioned, we purposefully biased our sample so that we would find cases, which makes generalizing the results sort of difficult. And finally, the medical record staff were unable to provide all of the charts at the time of review, so we don't know what was in those 16 charts that we couldn't find. So some of the recommendations that came out of this study, all hospitals should implement best practices for recording maternal surface antigen status on the metabolic screening form to improve accuracy. And the perinatal program in New York City is going to be communicating these best practices to hospitals in the city. And in addition to the current follow-up that's done on all positive metabolic screening forms, we recommend and are currently implementing follow-up consistently on all unknown and missing newborn screening cards. So finally, I would like to thank my co-authors and mentors at the New York City Department of Health, Julie Lazaroff, Jane Zucker, and Christopher Zimmerman, as well as the perinatal program staff, Ruchi MP, Amy Kwaki, and Copley Kemp.
Thank you, Ruth. I think we have plenty of time for questions, so if you have a question, please step up to the microphone in the center of the room.
Chris Zimmerman, New York City Health Department. For Dr. Newbern, in terms of doing the match between, so you were looking at surface antigen positive laboratory testing with birth certificates, I was wondering how many fields did you look at and how clean was that? I mean, my experience with sort of these big matching operations is they can be problematic, and certainly in New York City we're dealing with a birth cohort of 120,000, you know, and probably tens of thousands of surface antigen positive results that might come in a year. So I was wondering if you could sort of speak through the problems that you might have encountered in doing that match.
Definitely we have problems with common names, missing data, incorrect data. But I think, you know, we used a scoring system in SAS, and that helped us to identify cases, and then used additional, like on date of birth, for mother's date of birth and mother's name. We did a huge cleanup to make sure that especially the name was as clean as possible. Missing, we have a lot of problems with hyphenation and additional, you know, characters that shouldn't be in there that are going to ruin a potential match. But then also by using residential address and a cleaned up residential address as an additional matching variable, that helped. And if we had any other information that we could try to pull on, we did. But it took a lot. It took manual review for a number of the cases. Some we had, you know, a perfect score, and we were pretty happy with that. I don't know the proportion of that. I could, you know, definitely let you know that. But we definitely had a number that we had to look through, and we always erred on the side of being conservative. If we weren't sure if it was a match or not, we just didn't follow up on that.
I have a couple of questions about the capture-recapture. For the women who did not have a case-defining test when you did the capture-recapture, did you include all antibody testing or any of the, what was your restriction on the capture-recapture?
Yeah, you know, I knew I was going to get asked this, and I knew I should have written it all down. You know, typical antigen tests and DNA. So
whether it was positive or negative?
Positive, yeah. I mean, we only get positive reports anyways.
Okay. And then my second question, when you did the capture-recapture, and this is also in general, did you expand the age group beyond 12 to 40? Because I feel that's a little restrictive on the upper end.
Yeah, definitely agree. And that's actually, for our normal follow-up for our, by our disease investigators, we're actually having a discussion that's ongoing about that age range that we'll see what happens at the end of it. But for the capture-recapture, we didn't restrict on sex, we didn't restrict on age, we didn't, you know, it was any test we had that was a positive test that came back, because sometimes we have women classified as men, and it's because it's mostly lab, it's all, almost all lab results, and so we didn't want to have any of those restrictions.
Thank you.
Riyad Muhammad, physician in the acute epi and immunization divisions in the South Carolina Department of Health. I had a couple of questions for Dr. Newbern. And in fact, in South Carolina, we have the same problem that you described, that we've been told by CDC for a number of years that we aren't identifying all the perinatally exposed children. And so we're actually just in the process of embarking on a capture recapture ourselves. And so my two questions were, after you did your match, did you actually reach the CDC's case expectation?
We would get to, if you just include the cases up to the red on the final slide that I had, we got to 160, which gets us just below the new case limits for 2008. And in 2009, it was 180, I believe, or 170 something. So we're still, because it's the limit for us, the bottom limit was like 183 for the new criteria. So we're not quite there, but, you know, because we feel like we're going to do some of this chart review and find additional women that will get into that range. But I don't think we're going to get high into that range. But it definitely... now our coordinator is working a lot on following up on these kids, so it's keeping him very busy.
And my next question was, for us, one of the challenges in getting our data sets matched is that our birth certificate data sort of lives in another part of our agency, and so it's sort of a turf battle issue, and also sharing protected information. So we're dealing with that. So I wondered, did you have those challenges, or is it an easy situation for you all in Philadelphia?
I wasn't at the health department when we started using birth certificate data to feed the immunization registry, but because we have that, we get weekly to biweekly files of births in our county, and so we have ready access to the data. So I would, you know, say you need it to seed the immunization registry, and it helps the registry a lot too.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kate from Georgia. I'm the perinatal coordinator there. I actually have a couple comments, just from other ways, and thank you for your presentations, by the way. Just some other ways I find some cases. We do a lot with referrals from Refugee Health. They test for pregnancy and for Hep B status, so that's just another way I thought maybe I could share with you guys. And then also with Children's First programs, and we also get direct hospital referrals too, so I just wanted to share that all with you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you for great presentations. Jane Zucker from New York City Health Department. My question's for Tanya, and I have to sort of apologize for asking the question in advance, because we're very happy that we get the perinatal money, and I think it's really helped strengthen what we're able to do in New York City. But I guess I'd really like your thoughts about what the enhanced perinatal project has been able to accomplish. I'm not sure from the data that were presented that we know a lot more about case management issues than we did from just the general national surveillance information, and I'm really struck by the amount of missing information that's actually being reported by the enhanced projects. And the goal was really to be able to get more information about E antigen status, referral into care, and whether you think we're really being successful with that, and whether this is actually a good investment going forward. I want the money, I think it's helping our project, but I think it really begs the question of the real accomplishments of the enhanced project.
So the question is, what do I think the accomplishment?
Yeah, what has really been the added benefit of the enhanced perinatal project over the routine perinatal Hep B data that's presented nationally and completed in the annual surveys that we do?
I kind of put us on the spot a little bit, but I think, I mean, I think that there are a lot of data that we are receiving with this project that we don't receive through the national data, because, you know, the routine perinatal annual report that we get from all of the grantees is very, you know, bare bones, aggregate. I don't get any characterization of the cases, the countries where these women are coming from, the language needs of these women. I mean, we're finding ourselves pulling on these data for multiple different projects for, you know, trying to decide what kind of educational resources are needed, and you know, trying to just characterize, you know, even just starting with the infected infants, you know, what are the characteristics of those infants that we are known to be HBsAg positive, because we really don't get much of that through NNDSS. So I think we're envisioning too that a lot of these new fields, like the E antigen status or the DNA viral load, will become better populated over time, but we do realize that there are, you know, a lot of missing data at this point in time. But, you know, we're trying to continue this project each year in the hopes that we'll have more complete data. And I think Dr. Murphy wants to make some comments as well.
I really appreciate the question. Clearly, you have to have the data to get the feedback to know whether you're to assess and evaluate your program. And part of the efforts with the capture, recapture, and the other assessment of the newborn screen are ways that we're being able to assess how the program is working and whether we're finding the babies that we need to find. Currently, we do not have a good surveillance system that helps us to determine what the overall number of women are, or who those women are who are hepatitis B surface antigen positive. In addition, there are a number of papers now coming out looking at babies who are positive and seeing whether there are other interventions that could be taken to prevent those infants from having perinatal transmission. And unless we have a way of characterizing the women who are going to have infants who are at risk, we're not going to be able to address and identify those infants in the past. So it's the basic issue of, we need data in order to see where our problems are, where our successes are, and how we need to move forward. And I think people have done a great job in the enhanced project, but clearly there are some major areas where we need more information. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Veronica Alvarez of CDC. This is a question for Ms. Walker. I just need a clarification on one of your data points.
Okay.
The target age that you focused on was median age 29, 11 to 50, is that correct? Those are pregnant women?
That was the median age of the women enrolled in the study.
Okay,
in the project.
So the 11 to 50 were just the women that were enrolled
in
the project,
study,
but not necessarily pregnant.
Well, these were the HBsAg positive pregnant women enrolled in this study. Their median age was 29 and the range was 11 to 50 years.
Okay. Do you know how many were 40 to 50? Or what percentage was 40 to 50?
I can get that answer to you.
Yeah,
I don't know
I'd
off
like
the top
know.
Off of my head. You want to know how many were 40 to 50?
Yes, please.
I can get that to you. I can get that to you. I know that. I don't know it off the top of my head.
Because I'm actually field assigned to Philadelphia, and I work with Dr. Newbern. And okay. One of the things that we were thinking about is, you know, how to expand the age range. And okay. Just to get an idea, now that moms are having babies a little bit older in life,
yeah.
Whether we're excluding a certain, you know, range of women, maybe we should just expand that a little.
Yes, I always, when I send out my site-specific report, like women who are mid-40s and up, I'm like, are these real cases? I mean, just, you know, just to make sure. So, but yes, I can get that information to you.
I mean, it kind of gives me hope to get pregnant at the age of 40 or 50, but you know, it's like, yeah. Thank you so much, Ms. Walker.
You're welcome.